that we will be persuaded to say yes on one of them too. I must have this thing. Tonight we have Miles W., who recently picked up 2-year chip. We love to see him here at the NABA Club. He also has, he participates with the MARA program. The sponsor is Charles B., who is here tonight also. So please welcome Miles.
Good evening, everybody. I'm Miles, and I'm definitely an alcoholic. I think they passed the basket first because they're afraid I'm going to screw up and make sure they got donations. But the last time I told my story to, I was so nervous that I told it in about 4 minutes. So I'm pretty nervous tonight, too, so y'all will probably get a short meeting tonight. Let's see, I was born in Dalton, Georgia, and had what I would have thought was a real normal upbringing. My parents are still married, and they still live in the same house that I grew up in. But I'm sure, like a lot of y'all, I just growing up, I just never felt like I fit in anywhere, you know, until I started hanging around a bunch of drunks and addicts and stuff. When I was growing up, my dad was a pharmacist, and that didn't help things out very much. And also, my mom, when I was about 8 years old, she opened a gift shop up in the backyard. And although it was like 50 feet from the house, it might as well have been several miles away because she didn't ever come check on us and stuff. So I was free to do whatever my mind could come up with, which, you know, there was a full bar in there. So about 10, I started drinking. And a friend of mine, his mom worked up there too, and we just did whatever the hell came to our minds, and most of the time that wasn't very good. Another thing that was big in my childhood is Boy Scouts. Most people think of it as like a wholesome experience where you learn how to camp and all that kind of stuff, but every time we went camping, my scout leader brought along a large bottle. I'm not sure exactly what the bottle was, but at least a quart of Jack Daniels and a bunch of penthouses. So it was my first exposure to porn, and I started smoking cigarettes and in Boy Scouts and hanging out with a bunch of crazy people. Like, we started stealing and all kinds of stuff when I was in Boy Scouts. And I'm serious, it's pretty crazy. Like, we'd have these camperees, and all these other troops would be there, and at night when the lights were down low, we'd go steal all their firewood and break into the concession stand and all kind of stuff. So anyway, I found at an early age I liked the sort of criminal lifestyle, and started getting in trouble a lot when I was in middle school, and then junior high school too. It got mostly in fights. I was in a lot of fights. I was the biggest person in middle school, and I think a lot of people just wanted to show how strong they were or something. So I wasn't really starting them. I was getting people jump on me out of the blue and stuff like that. But anyway, I was in trouble all the time. Got into high school, and things continued about like that. I was drinking all the time on the weekends, getting in fights, got suspended a lot, got arrested, or not arrested, I got almost expelled for dealing in high school. I know that's an outside subject, but my story has a lot of outside things. Trying to think what other things I did in high school. It was pretty non-eventful. It was just more of the same, just getting in trouble all the time. I made decent grades, though. And I also, at that time, was heavily into music and art and also science. So those have been lifelong themes. And the music thing, I started playing in bands in high school, and I carried that on into college, and definitely had the sex, drugs, and rock and roll type lifestyle, but it was mostly the rock and roll, and realistically it was more than just the drugs and alcohol. In college also, I started getting arrested quite a few times. I got 3 DUIs and a possession charge. I remember one of the DUIs, the cops were asking me the regular questions like, do you have any tattoos and blah, 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 any distinguishing scars and stuff like that. And I just, first place, I cussed them out as much as I possibly could cuss them. And then I started telling them all kind of bizarre things, like my face was burned off and all this stuff. And I thought it was real cute and funny, but they were writing every word down. And when I went in there to plead my case, they read it all back to the judge. he said, I think you have an allergy to alcohol at the time. And I didn't really realize how profound that was, but it was true. My parents were paying for everything, so I wanted to stay in school just so I could continue my crazy lifestyle. And somehow I asked backwards, got accepted into dental school. And so I moved up to Morgantown, West Virginia, and went to dental school. And I couldn't find the drugs there like I found in Athens, but they drink in a different league up there. I mean, they don't give you DUIs. I got pulled over one time by the cops doing 95 miles an hour with an open container, drunk as a skunk, and they were getting ready to have a shift change, so they told me to just slow down and go on back. And they didn't give me a ticket for like 79 miles an hour, because over that it would have been reckless driving. So they think about drinking a little different than we do down here. I was playing in bands and having a big time, and the fighting thing continued. And of course, with the alcohol involved, I got pretty good at getting the crap kicked out of me. I go into a bar one night, and there's the football team's in there, and they had this girl back in the corner, and they were practically raping her in the bar. And I decided it'd be a good idea to see if I could help her. So I walked back to the biggest guy in the whole group, and he immediately turns around and punches some mirror, and like blood comes gushing out of his hands, and he just like takes another shot of tequila and looks at me. And so I decide I need to start talking to him for some reason. And then within just a few minutes, he picks me up and slings me across the table. The table just exploded, legs and stuff flying all over the place, and fortunately, my cigarette didn't break, so I got up and lit that and then ran like hell. Another time, this professional football player named Brian Joswiak, we come out, and he's ramming our car because we parked behind him. And so I walk up to him and try to talk some sense into him, and he just slows me right in the face, knocks me to the ground. And I'm like crawling underneath his car trying to get away from him, and he's kicking me with his cowboy boots on and stuff. So I go to the hospital because I'm going to sue him. I decided it's a good idea. I'm going to make a fortune suing this guy. And they didn't care about the fight. They just wouldn't let me leave because of my blood alcohol content. So I ended up in the hospital a bunch in dental school, emergency room, started having panic attacks when I tried to quit drinking by myself. And I don't know if you know what panic attacks are like, or just detoxing by yourself without slowing down. I mean, the whole world closes in, you think you're going to die and all that kind of stuff. And I thought I was having a heart attack. I didn't know what was going on. Another time I got stabbed in a mosh pit at Soundgarden. And it was at Lollapalooza, and we were really drunk, but we didn't want to take the ambulance to the hospital because it was too expensive, so we drove ourselves there. I don't know how we made it, but they didn't give me any topical anesthetic or anything because they said I was too drunk, but they sewed me up, and we made it back in time to see the Chili Peppers. Just all kinds of bad craziness went on. Dental school was a blur. Somehow I graduated, and we decided to move down here to Atlanta. We were thinking about staying up in Pittsburgh, but we decided to move down here. I had a bunch of friends, and I was going to get the old band back together, you know what I mean? And I got back with my old cronies, and we were off to the races again. I mean, drinking hard every weekend. I mean, almost like 24 hours of drinking type stuff. I remember feeling so freaking terrible after it, too. I remember one time I was driving home on the interstate just thinking, I'm going to get home and kill myself, you know. It was just felt so bad, and then it just shot, it scared me that I was actually thinking that way, but those were the exact thoughts. Continued drinking really, really hard, and of course I was playing the outside stuff, but not that heavily. Got married, bought a house and all that, and then we started having children, and then I started, well, anyway, it just escalated, and I got, started getting drunk every day, you know, stopping at the Pitch and Putt. I don't know if y'all know where that is, but on the way home, and things were just getting out of control. I was trying to quit myself, but I just couldn't do it, so I started going to some AA meetings, and I thought y'all were the biggest bunch of freaks in the world, but it was a place to go hang out. You know, I was usually drunk or high before I went into the meetings. And got a sponsor, like just ran up to the closest person I found and said, you want to be my sponsor? He's like, sure. You know, and that wasn't working very well. Tried pretty much anything short of going to rehab. I don't know if anybody's heard of this experimental drug called Ibogaine. You can go down to Mexico or a lot of different countries. And so I went down to Mexico twice and got treatments for this drug called Ibogaine. And it works. The first time I did it, I stayed dry for 2 months. And then the second time I did it, I stayed clean or dry for 5 months. I don't know how it works. It's a powerful hallucinogenic. I mean, you see visions that are just absolutely crazy. I mean, I was a big fan of Hunter Thompson, and he had killed himself like right before I went the second time. And I remember one of the visions. I was hanging out with Hunter Thompson, and then he pulls out a .45 and blows his head off. While I'm like trying to hold him and stuff, and it was just like it was real. I mean, it was freaked me out for days. But anyway, we decided after a while that it just wasn't working enough, and I reluctantly checked into rehab, thinking it was just going to be 90 days and I'd be all cool and skate through and stuff. And that was a big learning experience. I went to MAR. I don't know if anybody knows about that, but it's a very spiritual program, and that's what I needed. Matter of fact, I talked to several people about different rehabs around town, and they said, don't go to MAR, man. That place is the hardest core, but, you know, they're hardcore. So I figured I needed to go there, and they were definitely hardcore. And I was tough and all that kind of stuff at first, but after they finally cracked me, I cried for like 6 weeks afterwards and couldn't quit. Just all kind of mourning over old cats that had died and stuff like that, you know. Just because my emotions had been so sequestered or subdued with alcohol and drugs for so many years. I mean, I'm talking about just remembering all the stuff that was coming out and just going through the whole grieving process for all of it. It was crazy. Finally, 4.5 months after I got there, they let me go. Or didn't let me go. I left in good graces, and I've been going there twice a week ever since. I try to keep the AA thing going too, and some other meetings similar to AA 12-step meetings. And also they've got me in a crazy aftercare thing where I do all these aftercare meetings at MAR, and also through the board of dentistry found out about it too, so I have to get tested, and they can test for alcohol really good nowadays. They have a test that will go 8 days, so I haven't been tempted that much yet. Well, actually, let me change that. Probably not a day goes by that I don't think about drinking in some kind of way. You know, whether it's I'm mad at something or it's a beautiful day or whatever, you know, anything can trick me into thinking about drinking. Things now that I have, well, I'm flying again. I told you I'll be a short one. Things now that I have gotten sober and haven't had a drink in a couple of years are much better than they used to be, that's for sure. One of the things, though, about being drunk all the time is you don't have to experience all those emotions. Now I have emotions like normal people, and I just really don't know what to do with them for the most part. Even the good ones, the so-called good ones, they make me want to drink just as much as anything, you know. I am hoping for that joyous and free. I'm hoping for that one day, and I get little glimpses of it here and there, and I do experience joy sometimes, but for the most part I still have the restless, irritable, and discontent pretty heavily in my life. It's just the way I have always been, and it's just really hard to look past that, and I have to break out gratitude lists all the time and go to church and just need. I hate to admit it, but I actually have a much better day if I start the day out with something spiritual. My brain wants to tell me, no, you're all right, that's a bunch of bull crap, you know, but if I go to church or if I go to a meeting or anything to get my day started out right, it just ends up being a much better day. Otherwise, I can get all of them ahead and start talking, you know, doom and gloom, and it's all, everybody's picking on me, and it's not my fault, and all this kind of stuff. I have two children and a wife, and I'm trying my best to become fully integrated. Before, I just emotionally was not there. I was standing there or sitting there, but I didn't have any real kind of contact with them. And most of the time, I was mad. Nowadays, I'm really trying to be there for people more than I ever was before. Like, I just went to a soccer game with my sons, and I might have done that before, but I probably would have done it begrudgingly. Now it's at least it's enjoyable, and, you know, it's for him, it's not for me. It's not, everything is not about me anymore. It's hard to remember that, and it's hard to take the focus off me, but I've been given a lot of tools for doing that, and you know, life's getting better all the time. Another thing about being messed up all the time is I didn't realize what a financial pit I was digging myself into, and I didn't really care. So now, being sober, I have to deal with this financial stuff, and it's pretty taxing on you sometimes. But it is getting better. There is light at the end of the tunnel. It's been a rough 2 years getting things back together, but everybody tells me to just keep sticking to it, and, you know, eventually things will be much better. Life won't go away, but I'll be able to deal with the problems without getting wasted. As promised, I'm out of stuff to talk about. Does anybody have any questions or anything? There's a whole bunch of crap I forgot that I need to blow into it. Yes.
They have
one on Monday nights right now. They have one on Wednesday nights, but it's a CA group. But yeah, if anybody knows anyone who needs a rehab facility or anything, I'd recommend more. It's tough, but they have great success.
Did you ever hurt anybody when you were doing dentistry and
drinking? Well, there's a good story. Okay, I met my sponsor one day when he's in the office getting some dental work done, and I am out of my freaking mind on one of the outside sources, and he's got all these phones attached to him, and one keeps ringing, he's blowing it off and all that stuff, but finally one of them has this weird sort of ring, and he said, "I got to get this one." And he asked, "All right, whatever." And he goes, "Cocaine hotline." I said, "Oh shit!" So anyway, I finally got up the nerve to talk to him about that and started going to meetings with him, asking him to be my sponsor, and he's been my sponsor ever since. But I don't. As far as I know, I didn't hurt anybody. Matter of fact, at the time, I thought I was doing better dental work. But there are a few things I've had to redo, like crowns and things. But what it mainly made me do was become so perfectionistic that the work was good, but the patient was in the chair for 5 hours or something like that. Yeah. Yeah, I had the best Listerine in town. A little extra something in there. Anybody have any other questions? That is just going. If you come up with something, it'll jog my memory. I can remember stuff, but I don't know. Well, thank you all for listening.
Mark, how's your relationship with your family now?
With my parents? I'd say it's better than it ever has been. My mom's an adult child of an alcoholic, and my dad grew up in one of the most cold families you ever. I mean, they didn't want the kids to touch them, and they didn't kiss and hug and stuff like that. So I sort of got a lot of my stance of lack of emotional stuff from them, and still they're the way they were. We're not a fuzzy, warm and fuzzy kind of family. It's kind of strictly business. So that's the way it's always been. And as I've heard before, you can't. I'm looking in the wrong place if I'm looking for emotional support from them. But we get along great.
Yeah, your story's less than 30 minutes long. How long was your fifth step?
Hours. He probably remembers. Yeah, I mean, I just didn't want to do a drunkalogue. I mean, I could tell you all kind of crazy stories, like coming back from a Pink Floyd show one time in a limousine, and the driver, we're all just out of our minds, and we missed a detour sign, and hit a big thing of clay. Well, they're digging a pit, and the limousine goes flying through the air, and we land on the other side, and, you know, sparks and all kind of stuff, and the cops pull us over on the other side, but they didn't see that. They pulled us over for speeding and planted drugs on us. So the driver got arrested for DUI and cocaine. If they'd have searched the car, they'd have found all kinds of exhibits A through Z, but for some reason they decided to plant stuff on us, and then about a month later, planted someone on a big state official, and the cops got fired and stuff, so the charges were dropped. But I mean, I got tons and tons of stories like that, but I wanted to focus more on the recovery aspect of it.
Is your wife a saint?
Yes, she's right there. Yes, she put up with a lot of crap. Yeah.
The rest.
Charles? Sure?
Something about that yank in a blanket, whatever. You put on me.
Well, I mean, I'm always coming up with stuff. I have that creative side, so I'm always concocting some kind of scheme to get rich quick, usually. I don't know what that has to do with alcoholism. I mean, it's probably an ism in there somewhere. You know, the get rich quick, don't do the work type thing. That's the way I've lived my life mostly. I don't know.
Are you at peace with your past?
Yes, I'd say I'm at peace with my past. I can't remember, you know, I'm not thinking about all that right now, but yes, I think I am. There's a lot of financial decisions I made that I wish I hadn't. Now, God really helped me out on one thing. I think it was the day before I went to rehab, I was supposed to close on this piece of commercial property that I was going to buy without a tenant to go in it or anything. And And that people told me, I'll get ready to sign. I'll figure it out when I get there, you know. And they told me that that wouldn't be such a good idea. And so I didn't. And I mean, I can't even imagine what happened because the economy collapsed and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I would have I'd be bankrupt now. I couldn't have afforded it. But God intervened and made it so that I didn't buy that piece of property.
What
was
your
silver
bullet? What really made you decide to change your life
and go to
rehab? Was there one or just a combination or just
what's
one you can draw on
to help you? It's probably a whole bunch of stuff. I don't think there was a definite silver bullet. I've had stuff that was pretty crushing to think about. I mean, just everything I did, I was on stuff. Like, I mean, I went to church high. I went to court high. The last DUI I got, I was in the bathroom at the courthouse doing coke. I mean, that's pretty crazy. Just realizing how everything that I dreamed of life being was not even slightly turning out the way I thought it was going to be. I was just, it's like the commercial on TV where they show the junkie running down the street or whatever, and nobody, you want to be a track star, not a guy running from the cops. And I mean, it was just totally out of control. So I thought that I could stop doing stuff, but I just could not. I mean, the obsession was just out of control. I just could not think about anything except drugs and alcohol. And that has been lifted. The obsession is definitely gone. The desire to drink and stuff is definitely still there and raises its head all the time. And, sometimes it seems more logical than others, but fortunately not logical enough. Yes, my children haven't. I like to fool myself into believing that they weren't affected at all, but the counselors and stuff at Mar told me they were, and if in no other way than me just not being as good a dad as I could have been. I certainly wasn't in the mood to go help somebody learn how to ride a bike or toss a ball around the yard. I would always come up with excuses of things that needed to be done around the yard, so I'd go hide up underneath the house and get high and stuff like that, you know. All I wanted to do is be by myself and be high, and I'm a very social person, even though I got in a lot of fights, but with the people I wasn't fighting with, I was very social, you know. After a while, it was just me and drugs and alcohol, and that was not what I wanted.
That's my question. How long in between knowing you wanted to quit and you actually being able to put some time together? How long did you fight that up?
A couple of years at least. Because I just kept fighting rehab. There's no freaking way I was going to go to rehab. Earlier in my life, I had thought that rehab was a cool idea because I heard like Keith Richards went there every now and then to get clean, and then he was back out with a fresh attitude and looking like. So I thought of it as a place just to go get mended up before you go back out into the wars. But they were talking about stopping forever, and that didn't sound good to me. I just couldn't even get my mind around the idea of stopping forever. You know, what do you do? You know, I mean, what in the hell do people do if they're not drinking and doing drugs? But starting to find that out. You definitely got to do things to entertain yourself in sobriety.
Are you aware that it's a good idea that you have to give it away to keep your sobriety, like get out of
yourself? Yes, I am, and I've had some sponsees. I try to also help people out with dentistry. Is another way I try to do it. Probably not as good as I should be, though. Anything else?
Do you think that being a professional, a healthcare professional, I know they have a lot of support systems and support groups, but do you think, in a way, choosing that as a career path made it tougher to stay sober, or did it make any difference or didn't have these?
Well, now that they have found out, it's making it easier because they watch the shit out of you. I mean, random drug tests all the time, mandatory meetings, and they like looking in your eyes and stuff, you know, making sure you're all right. So that, at my weakest points, that's been one of the things that kept me from going back out, just knowing if I get busted. I mean, I am the kind of person who can drink and do drugs despite the consequences, but that's been something that has been integral into, especially the first part of it.
Were you uncomfortable practicing sober at first?
I only practiced messed up for a few years, and I've been practicing for a long time before that. After a while, it was bad. I was working on this lawyer one day, and I told her she needs a filling, and she's looking at me like, you know, this horrified look on her face. And I'm like, "What? You need a filling? Do you want to do it now and stuff?" And I go look in the mirror, and there's blood running down my nose. Huh? She did let me do the work. Yep. But I didn't even mention it again. I went to the bathroom, changed up real good, and you know, just she probably just assumed I had a nosebleed, and I had glassy eyes because I don't know. You know.
Go ahead. Did you
ever
hook yourself up in the gas machine?
Oh God, yes. I'm not allowed to have it in the office anymore. Well, we used to have parties. Everybody would be with those gloves, you know, our gloves, and we'd just hook them up to the tank and pass them around and stuff. It was fun. Anything else?
Have you become comfortable with spirituality?
Absolutely. And I pray daily sometimes, start to finish, but at least in the morning and the evening, I don't necessarily hit my knees like I'm supposed to, but I do pray daily. And my idea of what God is changes all the time, gets bigger and smaller, and you know, depending on where I am, but I just realize he's way bigger than me, and you know, like Charles says, there is a God and he's not me.
Did you ever get bad enough to where you're using intravenous drugs?
I tried IV drugs, and I also smoked crack, but neither one of them were my favorite. So,
like in your office and things? Or?
No, I know a lot of people that do, you know, but or did.
So you consider yourself out?
No,
there's
no.
A real low bottom person, or
not? Oh man, I mean, I was pretty low bottom. Yeah, I was within a second from losing everything. And I probably would have lost everything if my parents hadn't intervened, you know, with money and stuff like that. Because you can make a lot of crazy decisions when you're doing cocaine. But like I said earlier, I'm a painter now, and I'm working on a series of paintings. Right now it's about smoking cigarettes. It's not necessarily positive or negative, it's just like about denial and stuff. It's just a bunch of pictures of people smoking. But the next series I want to do is going to be on addiction itself, and I've got some ideas of like a businessman in a coat and tie and stuff with a sleeve rolled up shooting up, because I know some doctors and businessmen that shot up. I mean, I know some doctors, anesthesiologists, that would walk in and when nobody's looking, jab a needle in their leg and shoot it up and stuff, you know. It's pretty sick, it's a pretty crazy disease. And another painting I want to do, though, is just, I don't know if y'all know the painting Guernica or Guernica by Picasso. Well, I want to do one similar to that, but have all these images of addiction, like, you know, somebody with a gun in their mouth and shooting up and, you know, vomiting and all the good fun stuff that goes along with it. Yeah.
How long did it take you to work out 12 steps, having a little over 2 years now?
Well, I had to start over when I started rehab, and I finished within 6 months afterwards. I don't remember. So probably like 10 months, something like that, I'm thinking. Yeah. I'm glad y'all are helping me out here, because I run out of time. Tim.
Mills, your sponsor just went through a major recovery of his own recently, had a liver and kidney transplant. That was such a miracle. Being as close as you were to him, what was that experience?
Well, I'm very bad about calling him. I knew he was getting ready to, but when it actually happened, I read about it online when somebody had posted it on Nav, and I called him that day, so I felt pretty guilty about that. But I'm just really happy for him. I mean, he's a great guy, and I was scared for his life for a while because he was really... I was talking to him on the phone sometimes, and it sounded like he was high because of the chemicals all building up in his body. Now he's back to being his own real self, wanting me to do things, not stand in front of y'all and talk. Well, if there's no other questions, thank y'all for having me. And
now, if anybody would like to share how they stay sober for about two or three minutes, you're welcome to. You have a burning desire? Okay. Hey, we're passing the basket again. Seventh tradition, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting. Your donations support this group in AA Zone. And it's time for AA related. It's not. It's time for chips. And I was going to ask Richard. Peter, would you give out the chips, please, sir?
Good evening, all. My name's Pete, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi. We have a chip system here, just like they do all across Georgia and all around the world, actually. We have a white chip for a desire to stop drinking, join our way of life. That was Chris, ladies and gentlemen. Any second takers on a white chip? Okay, we've got silver chip for 30 days. We've got a red chip for 90 days. Yellow chip for 6 months. Green chip for 9 months. Because it's green, Frank. Blue chip for a year and multiples thereafter. Okay, we offer the white chip a second time for anybody who thinks you're going to get it cheaper on eBay. It's free here, okay? No? Well, thank goodness for the chip you got.
Good job, Peter. Get that white chip right here. Okay, do we have any AA-related announcements? Yes, Mark.
My name is Mark.
Hey, Mark. Okay, see Mark for a literature. Yes, Frank.
I'm Frank, and NAVA has a membership special through September 30th.
for new members or returning members, a year's membership would be $200 instead of $300. And for Al-Anons, it would be $120.
Okay, so that's a 33 1/3% discount if you prepay. That's a good deal.
You can see me after the meeting.
And see Frank after the meeting. Yes, indeed. And I saw an announcement for a big book study, a new group that's meeting on Tuesdays immediately after, well, not immediately, but there's a 5:45 open discussion in this room, and then at 7 o'clock, 15 minutes afterwards, there's a big book study on Tuesdays at 7 that runs till 7:45. Before the 8 o'clock newcomers meeting. So, didn't know about that until I saw that tonight. Nothing better than a good big book study, so I'm sure that's going to be a good one.
When was that?
Tomorrow. Tuesdays at 7 through 7:45.
Here?
Yes, it's right after the 5:45 open discussion. And it runs up for 45 minutes, and there's a 15-minute break, and then they have a newcomers meeting inside this room on Tuesdays. Okay, any other announcements? You get all the baskets collected, too? Okay, good deal. All right, well, I'd like to remind you, can we have any volunteers to help us get the room back together? Hey, that's a good start. Thank you. Appreciate that. Okay, well, I'd like to remind everybody that anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, every matter of space principles before personalities, and for those who will, let's join us, or please join us in the Lord's Prayer. Have you worked on a coffee machine before? Alright. Just go in and check, make sure all the cups are picked up, and then we're going to do the coffee machine in just a minute.
I still got like 3 more, so I'm good.